Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. In less than a week, you'll walk down to your local polling place and help decide the future of your communities. It's a big responsibility, and you've been hearing for weeks now on KALW reminders to get out and vote on Tuesday. You've also heard from San Francisco mayoral candidates on Cross Currents and the pros and cons of city propositions on Your Call. The next citywide election here in San Francisco is an important one and a heated one. In honor of the special occasion, I'd like to air a short and very vocal story produced leading up to the U.S. presidential election in 2008. In southwest Michigan, an unprecedented amount of election signs were stolen from yards that year, and radio producers Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister spoke with community members from both sides of the partisan line about how much their sign means to them.
My name is Bob Miller. We're at the Union Pier Campaign for Change office for Barack Obama. We distribute a lot of yard signs out of this office, and at least half, if not more, are distributed to people who come in to tell the story of how their sign's been stolen and they need another one.
Oh, you got my signs. Thank you so much.
My name is Susan Brower. I live in Harbert, Michigan.
They keep getting me.
We've always put a sign out or two, and no one has ever taken signs. This is the first time that we're having this experience.
It seems to be happening mostly at night and in every community around here.
My name is Dick Dwyer. I'm supporting John McCain in the upcoming presidential election.
My name is Sherry Lynn Galoro, and I live in New Buffalo, Michigan. I'm a McCain supporter, and I put my sign up in the yard, and one day it was there, and next day it was gone.
Both of them magically disappeared.
I was very angry.
My name is Rick Tuttle. I own a little bookstore in Three Oaks, Michigan. What I did was, instead of replacing the sign, I put a sign out that says, "Hey, you, put back my Obama sign."
Oh, we had a volunteer come in today who said that her sign was stolen, and so they put up a sign that said, "For every Obama sign you steal from this yard, I'm donating $50 more to the Obama campaign."
I have one friend who, she's replaced her sign twice now, and she's put grease on the borders of it, so when you pick it up, it hopefully will stick to your hand.
Well, my name's Leo Yovanovic. I live on Elm Valley Road outside of Three Oaks. And I decided to put an electric fence around it. There's four strands of electric wire, roughly 6x6 square, and the wires are about 12 inches apart, and there's four wires up. It ain't gonna kill you, you know, but if somebody wants to touch that wire, they're gonna get a little surprised.
I'm Mary Joan Allenwagen. I'm the village clerk and treasurer for the Village of Michiana. I had a resident come in and said that he had just seen a man over on Choctaw here in the village that was reportedly taking signs out of residents' yards and putting them in his vehicle.
I'm really hoping it's just a bunch of punk kids that are doing this, because if there's adults going out there and stealing signs, then we're in trouble.
The description was a slender white male, mid-70s, approximately 5'5", and he was driving a newer model charcoal-colored Lincoln Town Car. And they were Obama signs that he was putting into the back of his car.
I think they should be prosecuted. It's not very nice. It's not very Christian.
Mess with my sign and I'll take away your vote. That's what I'd do.
If they would just let the cops bring the guy back and just let him deal with the owner of the property, take him out bat and beat his butt or something, you know, that'd be the best way to take care of it, so we wouldn't have to go through the system.
I'm kind of disturbed by the undercurrent that seems to be running through this political campaign. I know there have always been signs stolen here and there throughout every campaign, but I haven't heard of instances like this before, so this is something new to me at least.
It could be another sign of how divided we are and how much healing needs to take place after the election's over.
I'm about to put back the sign.
I told my wife, I said, this is the third attempt of, you know, trying to keep a sign on our property, and if this one gets stolen, then I'll probably end up sleeping in a combine with a shotgun. So, yeah, I'm pretty passionate about keeping my Obama sign.
I've been so angry about them stealing it. I don't know what I'm going to do the third time. Don't want to cry, and I don't want to get any angrier. I just want people to stop doing this.
That piece was produced by Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister, co-founders of the radio-making collective Long Haul Productions. Some of my favorite community storytelling has been documented by Long Haul, and you can hear their best on the Long Haul podcast or surf their archives at longhaulpro.org. To The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best stories from indie radio producers and podcasts. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. What are some of your most memorable Halloween costumes? If I think about it quickly, at the top of my personal list are Agent Dana Scully.
I am a scientist who happens to have seen a lot.
Laughing Sal. And Pat from the Saturday Night Live sketch, It's Pat.
Surprise!
To me, these all represent fictional characters that I greatly respect and pull inspiration from in my day-to-day life. Seriously. And each time I took on their personas, I felt empowered. They were also costumes I couldn't just buy in a store. I mean, I look through all the Halloween shops every year, just in case a costume on the rack sticks out to me. They never do. Most of my options are variations of sexy public works employees. And for younger girls, the gender dichotomy of ready-wear costumes is just as limiting. This year, several big box stores have done away with the girl and boy designations in their costume sections and toy sections. Now, girls can feel a little less weird about grabbing that Iron Man costume off the shelf. And that is awesome. It's also awesome if you want to be Batgirl or Black Widow or any other ass-kicking silver screen superheroine. There's been an ongoing academic discussion across disciplines about the construction of the quote-unquote strong female character. The title sounds positive, but there are critics who argue that when these characters are featured in blockbuster superhero films, they're displayed more as tokens rather than fully realized characters. The podcast Imaginary Worlds focuses on how sci-fi and other fantasy genres are constructed and the reasons why we strive to suspend our disbelief. This past summer's crop of blockbusters sparked a spirited debate around a particular group of heroines and whether we need to rethink this whole problem of the strong female character. Here's a window onto that debate from Imaginary Worlds. A word before you listen, there is a lot of discussion of plot lines from recent sci-fi films, so let me extend a spoiler alert. That's a capital S, capital A sort of spoiler alert. Also, part of this story talks about the sexualization of female superheroes, and some folks might not appreciate some of the language that's used.
You're listening to Imaginary Worlds, a show about how we create them and why we suspend our disbelief. I'm Eric Malinsky. There's a term that gets used a lot in sci-fi fantasy criticism, the strong female character, and that's all in quotes.
Well, there's usually only one. You can't have more than one, because then that will upset the balance of the entire universe.
Right. Jan Combopiano is a senior vice president at Catalyst, a nonprofit that works to advance women in business.
You don't need to know anything about her. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have to be a fully realized character. She doesn't have to have a history.
She don't need no man, but she will find one. By the end, that will be part of her arc.
Lindsay Ellis is a media critic
she very often likes to on other women just to prove how much of a badass she is. And also, she tends to resent whenever people point out her womaniness.
Yeah, because a lot of times the, quote, strong female character to me is almost like when you're playing a video game and she just drops out of the sky. And she's just like, and she's just standing there with her, yeah, she's got like fists up already. And she's like, her ponytail, and she's just ready to fight.
A trope I hate is I feel like it's always like, yeah, I have five brothers, or like, my dad was in the army or something.
Right.
Like, her abilities are always explained away in that she got them from a man.
And here's Carolyn Cox, an editor of the website The Mary Sue.
And she's gorgeous and flawless at the same time. No matter what kind of life-threatening scenario she's in, she has time to shave her armpits.
And after all her tough talk and great hygiene, she ends up being a damsel that the hero has to save.
She has to earn his attention. And once she's earned it, he becomes a better hero because he saves such a strong person.
I mean, this bugs me, and I'm a guy. I mean, I love these movies, but I get frustrated when one of the main characters is really clearly underwritten and has no character flaws whatsoever, and it's obvious that this comes from a place of fear. And I'm honestly shocked at the way the studios refuse to make toys of the heroines. Like, they'll make all the Avengers but Black Widow. And the studios will argue, well, you know, girls don't buy action figures. And everyone who complains is just citing anecdotal evidence. Well, here's some anecdotal evidence. I was at New York Comic Con last fall, and there were several huge displays of every Lego minifigure you can imagine of the male characters. And while I was there, just looking around, several different girls came up, asking for Batgirl, Supergirl, Wonder Woman, even the villains, Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn. But they'd only made a few of those figures, and sold out that day. The first day of Comic-Con. The girls walked away disappointed. The studios also claim that women will see movies about men, but men won't see movies that star women. And when you bring up the Alien franchise or the Hunger Games, they dismiss them as flukes. So that was the state of frustration. Until the summer, when something happened that really surprised me. A few films came out featuring strong female characters. And some of the women who write about science fiction and fantasy that I read regularly disagreed with each other about these characters and whether we should rethink this whole problem. Now, the only way to talk about this subject is to go heavy on spoilers, because this debate is all about what happens in these films. So first, let's talk about Avengers, Age of Ultron. Since Iron Man 2, Scarlett Johansson has been playing Natasha Romanoff, aka Black Widow, a former Russian spy who now works for us. In the first Avengers movie, the villain Loki tells her that he knows all the bad stuff that she's done.
It's really not that complicated. I got red in my ledger. I'd like to wipe it out.
Can you? Can you wipe out that much red? Dreykov's daughter, Sao Paulo, the hospital fire. Barton told me everything. Your ledger is dripping. It's gushing red, and you think saving a man no more virtuous than yourself will change anything?
A lot of fans were curious, what is this big weight that she has on her shoulders? And the answer was not what they were expecting. In the sequel, Age of Ultron, there is a budding romance between Natasha and Bruce Banner, aka the Hulk. And when he tells her they can't be together because he could never be a husband or a father, she reveals that in the final stages of her training to be an assassin, she was sterilized. And then she reassures him that he is not the only monster on the team.
And all I could think of was, wait, what? You're a monster because of what?
Jan Campopiano was one of the many Black Widow fans that was upset.
It's not saying that it's bad that she wants to be a mother. If that was the story and that we had seen sort of the first steps of that in any previous movie that she ever wanted to be a mother, it wouldn't have been so shocking.
Yeah.
That reveal about what happened to her in the Red Room is awful. And it couldn't. And if it had just stopped there without the monster comment, I don't think we would have had this Twitter war. I don't know that we would have had quite as much vehemence about it.
Yeah. Although the sort of are we gods or monsters theme does come up throughout, like all the characters at some point do kind of wrestle with, am I a god or a monster?
Well, I mean, they both could be considered a monster. I mean, especially him.
Yeah.
He's a big green guy who destroys cities.
Yeah.
That's probably the definition of a monster. Her, because of her ledger, her red ledger, she could be a monster. But the fact she says she's a monster because she can't have children, I don't know. The connection that you're a god because you create something, that's Tony Stark's story, right? He creates Ultron. Thor is a god.
Right.
But Black Widow and Hawkeye, they're supposed to be people, right? Yeah. She's an awesome person. You know, her character, she's always really quick with a quip. She's very funny. She's very smart. No, it just, to me, was like a slap in the face to her as a character.
But a lot of women saw that scene differently, like Carolyn Cox.
And that scene in particular didn't offend me because I felt like the way it was framed, it wasn't being shown as like all women feel this way. I felt like it was one individual sharing her experience, as opposed to like in Jurassic World when Bryce Dallas Howard's character is pretty firm at first that she doesn't want to be a mother, and everyone in the movie, everyone in this world that's set up, makes her out to be a monster for that. So I think I appreciated Age of Ultron and that it felt like one woman's perspective.
But that wasn't the end of it. During the press junket, a reporter asked Jeremy Renner and Chris Evans if they were bothered that, after fans speculated Black Widow might hook up with either one of their characters, now she's being paired with Bruce Banner. And they were clearly feeling bored and punchy because it had been a really long, grueling press tour. And they joked that she was a slut and a whore, which sparked a social media firestorm. They both issued apologies, but it was pretty clear that Jeremy Renner thought the whole thing was ridiculous.
Now, look, mind you, we are talking about a fictional character and fictional behavior, but, Conan, if you slept with four of the six Avengers, no matter how much fun you had,
right,
you'd be a slut.
Yeah.
I think it was very clear how little gray area is afforded to her. Like, we're not allowed to go in between, you know, we're not allowed to be ambiguous about what partners we're going to have. And again, that would never happen with Tony Stark, you right. know, never in a million
oh, exactly,
years.
Yeah. Exactly.
There are so many double binds for women. They can't be too caring and soft because then they're wimps and they're not a strong female character. But if they're too strong and too ballsy, then people don't like them. And so they just have to navigate this really narrow bridge in between both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Male characters can be complete assholes and no one cares.
What surprised me most about this whole discussion was that I didn't know so many women felt a strong connection with Black Widow. I totally missed how unique it was for a heroine to get a dark past with a redemption story.
I'm gonna unhitch the pod!
And I felt the same way about Furiosa, Charlize Theron's character in Mad Max Fury Road.
You said a few vehicles in pursuit, maybe. We count three war parties!
Yeah, well, I got unlucky.
I thought she was just another strong female character. So I asked Lindsay Ellis, what did I miss?
She does get hurt and, you know, actually physically really feels it. And she needs Max. Like, that last really long chase scene of them kind of, like, saving each other 26 times.
Yeah.
Which I, you know, I thought was great. And, like, they defeat the bad guy by working together, but it is ultimately Furiosa's story. Therefore, it's ultimately her that, those, you know, pulls the thingy out of the bad guy's mouth.
The thingy is his menacing breathing apparatus. So in that movie, Furiosa has escaped the clutches of a post-apocalyptic warlord called Immortan Joe. And she stole his captive brides, some of whom are pregnant, and she's driving them back to her home base, which is actually populated by sort of badass women warriors. Now, it's implied that Joe raped Furiosa and the brides, but we don't see the rape on film, which we often do in these stories, and that's another problematic trope of the strong female character. So Mad Max was celebrated by feminists and denounced by misogynists. But then the media critic Anita Sarkeesian wrote a bunch of tweets slamming the movie, saying, "It makes me profoundly sad that mainstream pop culture now interprets feminism to mean women can drive fast and stoically kill people too!" Exclamation point. This is the same Anita Sarkeesian that was persecuted by trolls who threatened her life because of her critique of video games. So for her to denounce this movie was shocking for a lot of her supporters. And they let her know, which sparked a whole other debate.
In order to really kind of hold to that analysis, you completely have to ignore the vulnerability that Furiosa is allowed in the narrative, which is not nothing. You know, it's definitely there and it's important. And which is, I think, a reason why a lot of women related to her so intensely, where they wouldn't to, you know, a female character that isn't allowed, like, vulnerability and to be sad and to be scared.
But what about her argument that the action-adventure genre is inherently male because the characters solve their problems through violence?
It's something I feel like I inherently disagree with.
Carolyn Cox.
I love action, and I feel like I would be watching it regardless, and to watch to be able to have access to an action movie that doesn't offend me as a woman is so profound and unusual.
Right. It's almost like, just, you know, I don't need Wonder Woman in it. Just don't offend me. That's
yeah,
all.
That's all.
That's all I'm asked for.
That's what I personally felt Mad Max did. You know, that's not saying much in the grand scheme of things, but it's so rare. I mean, I feel like maybe since Sigourney Weaver in Aliens, I haven't felt that as much.
Years ago, the cartoonist Alison Bechdel wrote a frustrated article about the bare minimum she expects from these movies. The Bechdel test ended up becoming a cornerstone of feminist pop culture criticism, much to the surprise of Alison Bechdel herself. The test is pretty simple. There should be more than one woman in the movie. We're talking about women with speaking roles. They should talk to each other about something other than a guy or romance.
People tend to misappropriate it.
Again, Lindsay Ellis.
It can be used as a dismissive thing. Like, this idea that if a movie does pass it, it's instantly feminist, which is super reductive. And if it doesn't pass it, then it's problematic. And to me, it's more about who makes the movies and the way they see the world and how this reinforces the way we see the world.
That's why Jan Combopiano prefers a different standard, the Makomori test. That idea comes from the movie Pacific Rim, which is about people in giant robot suits fighting monsters. It does have only one strong female character, Makomori, but her story arc doesn't rely on a male hero.
When she was a child, these giant monsters came from this other dimension and destroyed Hong Kong, where she was from. She was a child, she's sitting there crying, and one of these giant robot human people came by and saved her. And he became her surrogate father. And so they have this whole relationship. How do you let go of a child? How do you let go of your parent to become who you need to be as an adult?
A long time ago, I made you a promise. Kigairunda.
The fact that I even have to mention that that's exciting and interesting to me as an adult woman in 2015 is kind of shocking. How many movies are like that?
Whenever this discussion comes up online, it gets heated really fast, like at the level of gun control, Obamacare, and Israel. But at the same time, a lot of men will question, well, why does this debate even matter? Aren't there more important issues to care about in the world? Well, for one, the fortunes of entire corporations are being propped up by tentpole movies with big special effects, which are supposed to appeal to the widest demographic possible. That's why this failure of imagination is so surprising and frustrating. But Lindsay says there's another reason why this matters.
We need to be more aware, not just of the women in the movies and the proportion of them, but the way that the men treat them. Do the male characters respect them? Do they feel the need to do this, I didn't know a girl could punch thing?
Right.
You know, just like this. Like,
exactly, like Max Lanzer's like, oh, you could draw it for a girl.
Yeah, yeah, it's like he never does that.
Yeah.
And just like the level, because of the level of respect Hawkeye and Black Widow have for each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, I'm so glad that's there. And I kind of feel like that kind of gets glossed over.
Yeah.
The fact that they have this platonic relationship, no one ever questions it, you know, no one ever goes, are you guys doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And like, they never disrespect each other, but they clearly have this like deep level of trust. I'm like, that's great. It's great that that's there, and it's important that that's there. And I think part of the thing that we really need to see more of is, you know, young boys especially need to learn, like, media is very important for learning empathy in our culture.
And empathy is something we are sorely lacking in our culture right now.
Carolyn Cox says there's only one real way to get change.
If there are more women creators out there, we'll gradually start to whittle away at that ingrained fear of women taking something away from us, and we'll just start to be able to actually see all creators as equal.
Now, there are women directors and writers attached to upcoming DC and Marvel movies. But, you know, until a movie starts shooting, you can't count on anything. I mean, I think what makes any character a strong character is that they're allowed to make choices. And the fact that so many people have disagreed about the choices these heroines are making is a small sign of progress. I mean, even if they make bad choices, at least they have a mind of their own. Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to Lindsay Ellis, Carolyn Cox, Jan Campopiano, Shauna Malofsky, and Serena Fong. You can like the show on Facebook. I tweeted E. Malinsky. The show's website is imaginaryworldspodcast.org.
For today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. I would love to hear about the podcasts you've been enjoying lately, so please send me your suggestions for future episodes of The Spot to thespot@kalw.org. Have a very happy and very safe Halloween, everyone, and tune in next Thursday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.